Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Tet Amud Aleph by the Mishnah. Meta ben b'toch shloshim yom. If the child passes away within the 30-day window, af al pi shenatan the kohen yachzir. Even though he's already given the money to the kohen, he has to refund the money. Rashi says yachzir d'nefel hava, because from this we get an indication that the baby was not a bar kayama, was not a viable entity. And therefore, you were not chayav in pidyona ben from the outset. And if you gave it to the money to the kohen, it was given mistakenly to the kohen. Rashi on yesterday's daf said something similar, but adds in some words that if it gives some indication of how Rashi's thinking of this. In the Mishnah yesterday, in the second widest lines of Rashi towards the bottom, it says hoil umei betoch lamed, because he died within the 30 days. The igle milta de nefelhu, and therefore it indicates that he is a nefel. Generally, when we say the igle milta, means that it's retroactive. Now we have information that the baby was considered to be a nefel. Tosafot over here disagrees with Rashi's expression, and he says here, "Meit beno b'toch shloshim yom, perish b'kuntres mishum de nefelhu." Rashi explains it's because then we know that he is considered to be a non-viable entity. Ubechinam perish king. There's no reason to say that. Dafilu kimla behu the kalulu chadashav. Even if we know that the child reached full term, and therefore there's no question that he's not a nefel, you don't even have to wait 30 days. We know for certain that it's a viable entity. Ben chodesh talar rachmana. You still don't do pidyon ben until after 30 days. What seems to be going on here is that there's a machloka between Rashi and Tosafot about Pidyon HaBen. What's clear from Balei HaTosafot, I mentioned this yesterday, is that there's a Gzeirat HaKatuv. Doesn't matter whether the baby is a viable entity or not a viable entity, you got to wait 30 days. Now, we can give expression or reason to why you wait 30 days, which is to check that it isn't an Nefel, but that doesn't mean that that's the reason, because even when we know it's not an Nefel, we still wait the 30 days. Which means that there's a gzeirat hakatuv, the pidyon ben must take place at 30 days, or after 30 days. Given that, there is no pidyon ben prior to that time, the chiyuv starts at that moment. And then the only way to effectively accomplish pidyon ben is at that moment. Rashi, on the other hand, seems to be indicating that the whole problem of the 30 days is that then it indicates retroactively that this was a nefel. But absent that information, it would be that pidyon ben should be able to take place even before the 30th day. It's as if the mitzvah is held in abeyance until you reach the 30th day. Once you have the 30th day, now you know that the pidyon ben all along was a good pidyon ben. That's what it sounds like from Rashi, especially since he uses the term v'iglai milta. Iglai milta is usually a term, usually has the word the mafreya. Iglai milta the mafreya. Then retroactively, we now indicate that the baby was a nefel all along. When the baby dies before the 30th day, Rashi says that goes back and shows us that it was a nefel, implying that until that point in time, we thought it was a bar kayama, the pidyon ben would have been effective, or it is a good pidyon ben. It's only because the baby died that retroactively it eliminates the fact that it was a good pidyon ben. But absent that, once you reach the 30th day, that makes it that retroactively it was a pidyon ben, or chiyuv a pidyon ben really existed from the moment the baby was born. So for the Balei HaTosafot, there's no chiyuv until after the 30 days have elapsed. For Rashi, it sounds like that after the 30 days elapse, that indicates to us that all along you were chayav in pidyon haben. It's a very different formulation, and it comes from the fact that Rashi keeps emphasizing here that once it's a nefel, now we know you weren't chayav in pidyon haben. Truth is, you weren't chayav in pidyon haben anyway. You have to wait 30 days. But Rashi seems to indicate the waiting the 30 days is just a way to clarify what's taking place during those 30-day period. Tell us what it says, nothing happens during those 30 days. It's only after the 30th day that you are chayav in pidyon haben. Tell us what over here does draw a distinction between how the baby dies as to what the halacha is in terms of determining that it was a nefel. Tell us what it says that if the baby died from falling off a roof or being eaten by a lion, that's no way an indication that the baby is a nefel. And maybe in that case we would deem the child to be a bar kayoma, and he would not have a din of a nefel. On the other hand, in cases where he dies, the Gemara calls it pihei gumet, whether he hiccuped, he burped, and then he died immediately, that's an indication of the lack of viability of the baby. But those what says, our Gemara here is clearly speaking about a case of pihei gumet, that type of situation. But in situations where there's a premature death because of exogenous items, not because of the health of the baby, maybe over there the baby would not be classified as a nefel, and he shows that will have implications for chalitza and other items in terms of whether the child is considered to be a bar kayama. Tosfot says, even given all that, maybe by avilut would be mefil, and even if nafal min agag or achlo ari, you still wouldn't have a din of avilut, because we are mefil by avilut. So Tosfot does make it clear that you have to distinguish between the type of deaths in order to determine whether this child is really dying because of its lack of viability versus dying because of these exogenous variables that shouldn't have an impact on the status of the child being a bar kayoma. All right, if the baby passes away after 30 days of elapse, even though you've yet to pay the pidyon ben, then you still have to give it at that point in time. That's because you're already chayav in pidyon ben once you crossed over the 30-day point. For the Bayit Tosafot, now the chiyuv kicked in. For Rashi, you've now indicated that it wasn't a nefel, and you were chayav and pidyon ben all along because of that. So now Tosafot over here makes a very interesting comment, which is going to lead us a little astray. I sent out the mikorot on this. But Tosafot says, with regards to the baby dying, achar shloshim yom, he says, the Gemara psochim aminan, davia ben mevarech shtaim, that says that the father of the child makes two brachot, one on the pidyon ben, one of Shechianu. Yesh l'sefek hacha. Over here we have a sefek. Kevin shemait, since the baby died, im mivarech Shechianu, do you still make the bracha of Shechianu? Kevin dezoche lekeyem a mitzvah, because you're still able to do the mitzvah of pidyon ben. When you do a pidyon ben, you make a bracha on pidyon ben, and you make a bracha of Shechianu. Question is now, when the baby died, do you still make a bracha of Shechianu? You're still accomplishing the mitzvah, but obviously there's a mitigating force. Tosfot over here doesn't say what the mitigating force is, but there is an alternate girsa, if you look in the sheet of Mikubetzet, where he says, Yesh l'sapei kachak, kevan shemait lo mivarech Shechianu, ditzara kamidkar, because he remembers the pain of the baby dying, oshema mikom akom mivarech. Or maybe, irrespective of that, he should make the bracha. Tosafot, the way we have it, doesn't spell the other side out. Shita Mikubetzet spells out the other side, which is, you remember the pain of the death, and maybe that should obviate the need for a Shechianu over here. Ve'ein litzmoa, and he says, it shouldn't be surprising to you, da'ad lo mevarchinu Shechianu akol mila u'mila. How come we don't make a Shechianu when we do a brit mila? Kamo al pidyon ben. The way that we do it on pidyon ben, shiny mitzvah pidyon ben, delo shichicha. Pidyon ben is not so common. So in this little Tosafot over here, there's like lots of big pieces of information that have significant influence over the sukkah of Shechianu. Tosafot brings the Gemara from Psachim, which makes it clear that there's a birkat Shechianu on pidyon ben. The problem is twofold. One is, what is the reason for the Shechianu? Because that will influence whether, when, in the case here, the child has passed away and you're still doing pidyon ben, do you still make a Shechianu? And number two is, the Gemara, not in the Bavli, not in the Yerushalmi, does not mention ever that you make a Shechianu by a brit milah. So the question is, either why not? Because by other mitzvot, we find that you do make a Shechianu, including pidyon ben. And maybe, even though the Gemara didn't mention it, you do make a Shechianu by milah. And we have to explain why that would be the case, as opposed to those who believe that it's not the case. So Tosafot gives us some keys to the information over here to understanding the bracha of Shechianu. The machloke with regards to the bracha of Shechianu, or really the impetus for making a bracha of Shechianu, one category of Shechianu is davar shahana o simcha, things that you get pleasure from, things that you enjoy. Those are things that generate or precipitate a birkat Shechianu. The other thing that is mentioned is davar haba mizman lizman, something that comes on a regular interval, that has something to do with the calendar and the cycling of the calendar. So for instance, Yom Tov, where we make a Shechianu on Yom Tov because of the fact that it comes Mizman Lizman. Now coming up to Shavuot, when we make Kiddush on Shavuot, we're going to say Shechianu because it's a Davar Haba Mizman Lizman. So the question is, do these fit into that category? So if you don't make a bracha by the Mila, then you have to explain why you don't make a bracha by the Mila. So here you could come up with two reasons not to make it, and that is because either it fails on one of the two reasons you make a Shechianu. One reason you make a Shechianu, we said, is the Davar Shel Simcha or Ana. The possibility is by Mila, it's Eino Davar Shel Simcha. It's not a thing of happiness. That is based on some of the Rishonim mentioned, Tzara the Yanoka, is that the pain of the child undergoing the Brit Milah, that might be a reason to not say Shechianu by Brit Milah. That's brought by many of the Mifashim, the Rishonim, and then would relate over here to our scenario in the Balei Tosafot, based on the Shita Mikubetzet's view, which is, maybe you shouldn't make a Shechianu by Pidyon HaBen, because you remember Tzara the Yanoka. You remember the death of the baby, which causes you some anguish. Maybe that obviates the need for Shechianu, which is a Simcha Bracha. So maybe that Tzar makes it that you don't make the Bracha of Shechianu. So that Migdirsa we don't have in our Tosafot, but the Shita Mikubetzet has in the Tosafot, would indicate that maybe that's enough of a reason by Pidyon HaBen to not do it when the son has passed away. So then by Mila too, Tzara the Yanoka should also maybe be a factor that wouldn't make you make a bracha. The offsetting positions to that, or the people who disagree with that, say that the bracha of Shechianu is made even in the face of death. That is, the Gemara in Brachot brings the fact that when a person's parent passes away, and then they inherit a fortune from their parents, they make a bracha of Shechianu. So there, even in the context of death, or even in the context of tsar, there's still something that is positive. That positive generates the Shechianu, even in the face of something negative. And so then, over here too, maybe the Shechianu should overcome that. Or, the other way that they phrase it is, trudim betinok. Everybody's very worried about the baby, is focused on the baby because both of its age and undergoing the surgery, quote unquote. So forget about Tzara the Yanoka, it's just the people themselves are true din betinok. Maybe that eliminates the din of Shechianu because there's no simcha. Or maybe it's not a davar haba mizman lizman. It's not something that recurs. It's not something that happens on a fixed basis. And so therefore things like tefillin, milah, which are not generated by time, maybe there you wouldn't have a din of birkat Shechianu. Or the other possibility is because from the time that the baby is born till the time that the milah is performed is only 7 days. That's a really small period of time, and therefore you wouldn't make a Shechianu because there's not enough of a lapse time in order to make a Shechianu. In order for something to be mizman lizman, or something that happens after zman, you need a certain amount of elapsed time to make it a Shechianu. Those would be the reasons maybe by Milah we wouldn't make the bracha. There are other reasons brought by the Rishonim as to why. One of which is the word Shechianu is not mentioned in the Gemara anywhere with regards to Milah. So maybe you would have expected that would be the case. Although we do have other examples like that, including Shofar, where we make a Shechianu and it's not mentioned in the Gemara. The other possibility is based on our sugya here also, which is that he's not a bar kayoma. He's still a possibility in the world of Nefel, and therefore in the 7 days, maybe you shouldn't make a Shechianu because of that. Those that disagree say, we'll go after the robe. Robe children survive and are viable entities, and therefore you should make the Shechianu based on the robe. Or others say that it's because it's not a mitzvah that is specifically to one person, but rather a mitzvah that's mutala beitin or al klal Yisrael as a whole, and therefore you don't make a Shechianu. Those that disagree there say that that's true, that it's a mitzvah that devolves upon all of klal Yisrael to make sure the child is a brit, but there's a particular mitzvah on the father to perform the mitzvah or do the mitzvah. Or there's also a possibility, according to some, that anytime there's a shutafut, when you have partnerships, you don't make Shechianu. The problem with that is you don't make Shechianu, you make a tova meitiv. Because then more than one person is benefiting from the item, And there you'd make a Tova Meitiv and not a Shechianu. So then you should be making a Tova Meitiv. Or the other possibility is that you only make a Shechianu when you yourself do the mitzvah. But if someone else performs the mitzvah on your behalf, you don't make a Shechianu, meaning that you have to believe in that chiluk, that there's a difference between whether you perform the mitzvah or someone else performs the mitzvah in order to make the Shechianu. That's the case, since the majority of people don't do the Brit Milah, they have someone else, the Moel, do it on their behalf. Maybe that's a reason not to make a Shechianu. Or others suggest that maybe it's a mitzvah tmidit. So what we said before, it's only when it comes to Mizman Lizman. Over here, once you have a Brit Milah, you have it permanently. It stays with you forever. So it's not called something that becomes Mizman Lizman. Even if you say that a mitzvah happens once in your life, you make a Shechianu, that's only true when the mitzvah is a passing mitzvah. It's not something where it's a mitzvah that's continuous afterwards, and so maybe over here there's no reason to make a Shechianu. Or others suggest that the Chavos D'Oyer makes a point that you made a Shechianu when the baby is born. Maybe that already counts or covers the Shechianu of the Milah. So all of those are reasons why maybe by a Brit Milah you would not make Shechianu. We know that there are Rishonim that believe you should, and the Gra is of the opinion that you should make a Shechianu. And that leads to the difference in the practices in Eretz Yisrael versus the Chutz La'aretz. Where in Chutz La'aretz they do not make a Birchat Shechianu by Brit Milah, whereas in Eretz Yisrael, based on the Gra, they do make Shechianu by the Brit Milah. And so the reasons not to, we went through. Each of those reasons, we noted, has an objection as to why it's not a strong reason not to make a Shechianu. And therefore, in Eretz Yisrael, based on the Gra, they do make Shechianu by Brit Milah. What's interesting and also very apparent in this Tosfot over here is many of the reasons you wouldn't make a Birchat Shechianu by Milah should also apply to Pidyon HaBen. And therefore, why do we make a bracha of Shechianu by Pidyon HaBen? Because if it's an issue of Simcha, then maybe you can argue there's a distinction between Milah and Pidyon HaBen, because by Milah you have the Tzara, the Yenoka, or their Torah Betino, so maybe some of the Simcha is mitigated. Whereas Pidyon HaBen, you don't have that, so that would be a reason maybe to make the Shechianu by Pidyon HaBen and not by the Milah. But then that would then bring up Tosafot's issue, which is now here when the baby has died. Maybe that is a mitigating force, and maybe that should be a reason not to make the Shechianu here by the Pidyon HaBen. The other possibility is that it's a Davar HaBad Lizman Lizman. And this becomes more difficult, because then how do you separate between a Pidyon HaBen and a Milah with regards to Davar HaBad Lizman Lizman? If you consider Pidyon HaBen something that's Bad Lizman Lizman, then also Milah should have that same classification. Or if Milah is not Ba Mizman Lizman, then Pidyon HaBen should also not be Mizman Lizman. So now, here you have three answers that are given by the Rishonim. One is, Pidyon HaBen, even though it doesn't come Mizman Lizman, because it's a mitzvah that is Talui in Lamed Yom, it leaves the classification of being a Nefel and becomes a Bar Kayoma, so there it's worthwhile to make a Shechianu. So that would be unique to Pidyon HaBen versus Milah, which is the crossover between Nefel to being a Bar Kayama. That only serves to enhance the idea that by Pidyon HaBen there should be a bracha, because you have the coincidence of the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, as well as the baby transforming from the gather of Nefel into the gather of Bar Kayama, and that's a reason in itself to make the Shechianu, even though it's not Ba Mizman Lizman, it's a significant time threshold. And so because of that, you would make a Birkat Shechianu. The other one is that Shiny mitzvah Pidyon HaBen, which is brought by the Tosfot over here, Dalo Shchicha, doesn't happen so often. V'domel mitzvah Shei Mizman Lizman, and it's similar to a mitzvah that comes Mizman Lizman. That's what Tosfot indicated over here. That's the difference between Milah versus Pidyon HaBen. Everybody gets a Milah. Not everybody gets a Pidyon HaBen. So that distinction makes it that it simulates the effect of Mizman Lizman. The idea of making a Birkat Shechianu Mizman Lizman is something that recurs or happens, but not often. It happens over a period of time in which there's a gap of time and you have to wait for that time period in order to reach the Birkat Shechianu. In a case where everybody does it, it happens all the time, that's not something that is unusual, something that you wait through time, and therefore you wouldn't make a Shechianu. Pidyon HaBen, which not everybody has, doesn't happen so often, that already might be a reason to make the Shechianu or deem it like Mizman Lizman. So that's what Tosafot said over here. The Shiny Mitzvah HaBen, the Lo Shchicha. Lo Shchicha has an impact over here because it simulates the effect of Mizman Lizman. Or the Rokeach brings in the Gemara Brachot that Lamed Yom is Zman Chashuv. It's a significant block of time, which happens to be that some of the times we make a Birkat Shehecheyanu, then you need to wait 30 days. Meaning that if something happens, Mizman Azman, 30 days is the window in which you would make another Birkat Shehecheyanu if something happened again. If, for instance, not seeing someone for a duration of time, the duration of time that you need is 30 days. That 30 days is a significant block of time. As opposed to Mila, which happens after 7 days, where there's no significant block of time, Tijon Ben, which takes place after 30 days, from the time the child was born, the anticipation to the mitzvah, which we spoke about before, is 30 days. That anticipation is long enough that it's considered to be, quote, Mizman Mizman, or something that would require a Birkat Shehecheyanu. It's just something that you know is going to happen, but it takes time to elapse. And the day of Shehecheyanu is Shehecheyanu. God kept us alive, Vikimanu Lagia, to reach this point in time. You can't say Shehecheyanu every day. Yes, you live every day, but it has to be a significant block of time that God has kept you alive to reach the point to see this mitzvah. So what is that block of time? The Rokeach says 30 days is considered to be a significant amount of time for this. And therefore, by Pidgin and Ben, you have that. By Brit Milah, you don't have that. The anticipation to get to the Brit is a very short window, and therefore the mitzvah is accomplished before you wait that elapsed time. And therefore, maybe you can't make the Shehecheyanu by Milah, but you would make it by Pidyon HaBen. Anyway, that's just a little bit of a sidebar, but this Tosafot has embedded in two lines a lot of information that has serious impact with regards to the bracha of Shehecheyanu. Right now, continuing the Mishnah, Meit B'Yom Shloshim. If the baby passed away on the 30th day, Yom Shilifanav. The Tanakhama says it's equivalent to the day before, meaning that it's the same din of Meita Ben B'Toch Shloshim. It's no different between within 30 days and the 30th day. The 30th day is within 30 days, according to the Tanakhama. Rekiva Omer, Im Natan, if he already gave the money, Lo Yito, he can't take it back. Vim Lo Natan, as if he has yet to give the money, Lo Yitein, then he shouldn't give it. What's clear from the Rabbi Akiva is they have some sort of safek over here. And the safek then makes it that the burden of proof is on the party that's trying to extract the money. So the father already paid. Then the 30th day is a safek. He's got to prove that the 30th day is considered to be a nafel to get the money back. If he has yet to pay, then the obligation's on the kohen to extract the money, because we don't know if the 30th day is b'toch shloshim yom or achar shloshim yom, and that's why he wouldn't pay if he has yet to pay. So that's the view of Rabbi Kiva. Mai tamayu derabanan. What is the reasoning of the Rabbanan's position? The truth is that it shouldn't really be a question what the reason of the Rabbanan is, because the Rabbanan seemed to be the pretty straightforward position, which is 30 days. And so if you have to wait 30 days, then if it dies on the 30th day, that's within 30 days. So then what's the question as to what the reason of the Rabbanan is? The reason of the Rabbanan is pretty straightforward. The question of the Gemara should have been the other way around. What's the reason of Rabbi Akiva that he thinks it's a safek? The Rabbanan have a very straightforward and understandable position. So from that, you have to start to think that maybe the Rabbanan's position isn't as simple as we thought. And just because it's the 30th day doesn't mean that it's Toch Shloshim. Maybe there's something unique about the 30th day. So that can come for a number of reasons, which I'm going to point out in a minute, once we go through the answer of the Gemara, as to what would have you thought had it not been for what the Gemara asks over here. So Gamre, they learn it as Chodesh, Chodesh Mimidbar. So again, these are Parshiot HaShavua. So in Parshat Korach, with regards to the Chiyuv of Pidyon Bechor, it says Upduyav Miben Chodesh Tifteh, that the Pidyon Bechor is Miben Chodesh. And by the Midbar, when it says that you should count the Bechorim, you should count the Bnei Levi, it says, Ko b'chor zachar mi ben chodesh v'mala. So also over there, it says, mi ben chodesh. You should count them. And just like by the Midbar, where it says, ulemala, it says, ben chodesh ulemala. If you believe that 30 days meant 29 days, and the 30th day was already counted as being beyond, then you wouldn't need to say ulemala. The fact that you said ulemala indicates that the chodesh is 30 days, and then the mala is the point which you start counting. Or in essence, you count from the 31st day, not anybody's at the 30th day. So just like by the census in the Midbar, the mala means after 30 days, so too by the Pidyon HaBen, it means full 30 days, and then only on the 31st day will you do the Pidyon HaBen. That is the Gzeira Shava. So Mahatam Ulamala, Just like over there, it's the extra day that you have to wait. Afkan ulamalo. So to over here, you have to wait that extra day. So it's mi ben chodesh ulamalo. You could have read that as mi ben chodesh from the 30th day. Ulamalo means anything above that. But the way that the Gemara reads it over here is ben chodesh ulamalo is a single phrase, which is the time period that you count is the lamalo mi chodesh, above a month, above the 30 days. Rabbi Kiva misapkale, and Rabbi Kiva is misupak. Why then by arachin does it also write ulamala? Velo gamrei mi midbar. And we don't learn it out of midbar. Avelu shnei ktuvim abayim kechad. That makes it into two psukim that teach you the same din. Chol shnei ktuvim abayim kechad, ein melamdim. When you have two psukim teaching you the same din, ein melamdim, they don't teach you. Oh, dilma ki ein melamdim la'alma. Maybe that's only true when you're dealing with items outside of the context of that which you're speaking about the gufayu, but within the context of what you're speaking about, melamdim, and there you would teach umishum hachi misapkim nlei or misapkale. For that reason, he is misafik. Let's deal with Rabbi Akiva first. Rabbi Akiva says that we have three different places where the issue comes up. We have it here by the census in the midbar, where it clearly says mi ben chodesh lamala. It also says it the word lamala is used by arachin. Arachin have categories of ages in which you pay certain amounts. So it says if you are from 1 month until 5 years, 5 years until 20, 20 until 60, 60 and above. The question is, each of those categories has an overlapping period of time. So for instance, if you are exactly 20, are you then in the 5 to 20 category? Are you in the 20 to 60 category? If you are 60, are you 20 to 60 then? Or are you 60 and above? Which way does it fall? So the Gemara in Arachin tells us that they learn a shana, shana, the gzer shava, kashem shishnat shishim kilamata haymenu, just like the 60th year is classified as being below it, the hachmir, av shnat chamesh v'shnat esrim kilamata. So too, when it says 5 years and 20 years, they have the din of being lower. Afa gav de la hakel. Even though over there, it turns out to be a kula. But who they did, they've been ben chodesh. And so too by ben chodesh. What Rashi points out is, when it says, umi ben shishim olamalo, from 60 years and up, up again means above 60 years. So that means that when you're at 60 itself, we count you as being in the category of 20 to 60. Gemara then says that shana teaches us gezer shava to 20 years old, that we classify 20 years old as being 5 to 20 rather than 20 and above. And also for 5 year old, it counted as a month to 5 and not 5 to 20. So in those two cases, it's going to turn out to be the kula. By 60, it's the chumra. If you're above 60, it drops the price. But if 20 to 60 is the highest price. By 20, it's actually going to turn out to the kula because you're going to now make you 20 to 5 to 20 range instead of the 20 to 60 range, which is a higher price. Same thing with 5 years old. 5 to 20 is higher than a month to 5, but you're going to count it. And same thing with Ben Chodesh. Ben Chodesh, we're going to count it as being 30th day, as if it was the same as before the 30th day, which means you pay nothing. Under a Chodesh, there is no Arachin. So what you see from Arachin is the same din that we have here. That when you have an age, it means up to that age is classified as being below that age. Then the day afterwards is considered to be above that age. So the same din that we learn here by the Midbar of 30 days is considered to be like Tok Shloshim. And then the next day, the 31st day, is already considered to be the next category. And so what Rabbi Akiva points out is, if you are right that this is a paradigm, the Midbar is a paradigm, then that paradigm should be able to teach us about Pechor, Pidyon Pechor, but also should have been able to teach us about Arachin. The fact that the Gemara didn't learn from the census in the Midbar to Arachin means that they needed another limud over there by Arachin. Why do you need another limud by Arachin? The limud by Arachin indicates that we couldn't have used the paradigm of the census in the Midbar. And that makes it into what's called Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Ke'achad. Now truthfully, this is different than your classic Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Ke'achad. It's not two psukim, it's two dinim that come together. The Torah teaches you the same din twice, and it doesn't need to teach you the same din twice. L.A. and Cain, those are the exceptions to the rule. This is what we discuss all the time. that if the Torah wants to tell you something and then it becomes a paradigm, it mentions it once. And then we use binyan av to build it to everything else. If the Torah already mentions the item twice, it's telling you not that these are the paradigm, but rather these are the exceptions to the rule. And so that's what Rabbi Akiva is saying. If the Torah had to tell you in two places that whatever age it is counted as below, and then amala means you have to wait a day afterwards, if that's the case, then it's the exception to the rule, not the rule. So that means that by the census in the Midbar, and by the Arachin, the din will be that way. Outside of there, that will not be the din. Then why does Rabbi Akiva even have a suffix? That's because Bechor, Pidyon Bechor, is something that is what happened in the Midbar. The census in the Midbar was with the Bechorim and with the Leviim. So the census itself was about an issue of Bechor. Now when I go to Korach, and it says, Pidyon HaBen is Ben Chodesh, then do I say Ben Chodesh or Lamala? Just like the Midbar? Because that's also a din of Bechor. It's maybe part of the exception to the rule, because the census of Bechor and Arachin were the two things that were the exception. But they are the exceptions. Maybe it's included in one of those exceptions. Or do I say that was in the Midbar? The Dorot is different, and maybe this is outside of the exception, and therefore you can't learn it. So that's Rabbi Akiva's suffix, whether it's included in the exceptions to the rule, because the count was about Bechorim, or maybe it is not within the exceptions to the rule, and therefore it doesn't have this din. That's why he has this suffix. That's what generates Rabbi Akiva's shita. So we want two more lines, and then we'll go back and try to bring this all together. Amar Avashi, Hakol Modim Le'inyan Aveilut, Yom Shlochim Ki Yom Shalefanav. This is the girsa that we have in our Gemara. The way that we have it is that the 30th day for Aveilut is like the day before. Or in essence, the same way that the Rabbanan and our Mishnah, the 30th day is the same as Tok Shlochim, within 30 days, which means that you would not sit Shiva, you would not have Aveilut for a baby that passed away in the first 30 days, including in the 30th day itself. It's Kiyom Shilafanav. Ve'amar Shmuel is the girsa that we have, but you can see that it may change the girsa, and it would make sense here, Da'amar Shmuel. Because Shmuel says, Halachak Divrei Mekil Ba'avel. When it comes to Aveilut, we always paskin like the most lenient opinion. And over here, to say that the 30th day is like Tov Shloshim would be a lenient opinion, because then you wouldn't have Aveilut. And therefore we'd be Mekil over here to say there's no Aveilut on the 30th day. Because of our din, we have a machlok between the Rabbi Akiva and the Chachamim, over here by Aveilut, everybody would agree that Shloshim is like beforehand, because we passed in the Kula with regards to Aveilut. Now that goes to the fact that in their day, they did not have Aveilut for babies that didn't make it to the threshold of Bar Kayama within 30 days. That likely is because of the realities of their time. In Torat Adam, the Ramban mentions the fact that there's enough tsar in the world, there's enough Aveilut already, we don't need to add on additional Aveilut. What he's basically speaking to is the infant mortality rate. I mean, that 50% of children did not make it, and so the fact that a child was born wasn't any guarantee that the child was going to make it, and people were very weary of the child actually making it, and the first 30 days were very precarious, and therefore people were not, we'll call it, so upset. You can't say they weren't upset. But the fact that it happened so often made it that it wasn't something that required of Aveilut. Which would mean that today, that reality has changed. And since the infant mortality rates have significantly plummeted, and people do believe that a child will survive, and we don't think in the first 30 days that it's so precarious the child's not going to make it, so then maybe today there would be a din of Aveilut for a child even under 30 days. And that generally is the practice, that even under 30 days today, that the people do have Aveilut, and they do certain practices that we do for a regular person in terms of Aveilut, they do even for a child, which is classified as a Nafel according to the Gemara, they treat it as if it was a Bar Kayama. But that probably has to do with the change in reality. But now, that's one way you could read the Gemara. There is another Girsa, you can see that in the Shita Mekubetzet, as well as in the Rabbeinu Gershom, that the girsa here is Amar Rav Ashi, Hakol Modim Le'in Aveilut, Yom Shloshim Ke Yom Shla Acharav. The 30th day is like the next day. It's like the 31st day. So either it could be that they're saying that it's the 31st day, and therefore it's the Chumrah, and then the Gemara is coming to say, no, V'amar Shmuel Alok Kedivere Mekub Avel, and therefore it's a rejection of that view. Or if you say the girsa is Da'amar Shmuel, that the law is kedivrei hamekil, then you'd have to say that this has to do with something that's a kula by making the 30th day like the 31st day. And if you look in the Rabbeinu Gershom, he points that out. He says, the Yom Lamed Kishel Acharav. The 30th day is like the 31st day. Umutar begehutz ubetisporet. And therefore you're allowed to launder, get a haircut. This has to do with shloshim of avelut. You have certain restrictions associated with shloshim. What about the 30th day itself? What's the din of the 30th day? Is the din of the 30th day like tosh shloshim, which would make it that you have to keep all the nihugei avelut of shloshim? Or is it like the next day, and therefore already you don't need to keep the nihugei avelut? So that would be a kula. That's what Shmuel's saying. Because the din is the kula by avelut, therefore the 30th day is already considered to be like the 31st day. That could either be because mixat hayom kikulo, which is the way that we paskin in avelut, that it makes it ayom already makes it like the next day, and therefore once you get to the morning of the 30th day, we consider it already as you've completed 30, and now you're into the 31st day, and the nihugei avelut fall away, because it makes it ayom kikulo. That could be what's generating it, or you could really believe, because of the safek of our Mishnah, we have a machloket tanaim, even though we wouldn't pass like Rabbi Kiva normally, by avelut, we would bring Rabbi Kiva in and say, the halacha is kedivrei ha-meikil, and therefore we'll treat it kayom shakarav. And therefore, the 30th day is like the 31st day. In that way, it has nothing to do with our sugya over here. It's nothing to do with babies and bar kayom at 30th day. It's a din in 30 days in general, not necessarily connected to a bar kayom. That's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom reads it. There are others that suggest it has to do with a shmua rechoka and a shmua krova, which is that if you find out about a relative that passed away that you need to shid shiva for, depending on where you find out about it, the nihugim are different. If you find it out, b'shmua krova, you find out about it within a window of time, 30 days, it's called a shmua krova, you have to sit a full avelut. If you find it out after the elapsement of that period of time, then it's called a shmua rechoka, and you only sit one day, or mix at the yom kikulo, a very short amount of time of avelut. So that shmua krova, or shmua rechoka, would be determined by whether the 30th day is considered kilofanav or kacharav. What is it called? The Shmua Rechoka. So some suggest that's what's being said over here, that the 30th day is like the 31st day for Shmua Rechoka, and it's classified as a Shmua Rechoka, not a Shmua Krova. So that's another din that could be affected by what we're saying over here. So now, we have to go back and ask, why do we need to know that the Rabbanon believed that the 30th day is Tov Shloshim Yom? Wasn't that something simple? Shouldn't that been something obvious that we should have known? So the question is, what are the alternatives? What is the other view that the 30th day is considered to be? Kiyom Shacharav. So one possibility is what we just said by Avelut, which is Mixat Hayom Kikulo. I generally believe that a portion of a day is considered to be the next day already. So maybe that's enough over here to say that by Pidgin Aben, it should also be Mixat Hayom Kikulo, and should already be able to do the Pidgin Aben on the 30th day, not have to wait for the 31st day. So that's one possibility as to why the Rabbanon's position is not so straightforward, or maybe we would have thought otherwise. And therefore, the Rabbanon are coming to say, by Pidgin Aben, that's not the case. We don't have Mixat Hayom Kikulo. But what's more interesting is actually what the Rabbeinu Gershom says over here, and this might be the reason that this was brought down. The Rabbeinu Gershom over here says something incredible. That's what you were asking before. It says, Bamidbar Ktiv Ulamalo. Dainu shloshim miyoter. That is a little more than 30 days. Because chodesh havei kaftet yamim umechza, the normal lunar month is 29 and a half days. Umalo havei yom echad. Umalo means one day beyond that. Hainu lamet yom umechza. That's 30 and a half days. So what the Rabbeinu Gershom opens up over here is, what's the definition of chodesh over here? The word chodesh does not necessarily mean 30 days. Chodesh in our parlance means 29 or 30 days, but that's because by a chodesh we can't deal with half days. So we make it 29 or 30 days. But the real chodesh is 29 and a half days. So maybe that's what the Rabbanan over here are coming to mitigate and say, don't think the word chodesh over here means 29 and a half days. It really means a full 30 days, against what the Rabbeinu Gershom says. That's the way the Magen Avraham reads the sugya over here, that's why the Chachamim had to come and say, what's the reason of the Chachamim? Because you would have thought it was 29 and a half days. How do you know it's 30 days? That's the Gzer Shel, the Chodesh. That's the reasoning of the Chachamim, that it's a full 30 days, and not the 29 and a half days you might have thought. So that's the way the Magen Avraham reads it. On the other hand, the Rebbeinu Gershom believes that's what the Chachamim are saying. It's not that that's what they're coming to say, we are coming to mitigate. That's exactly what they're saying, that it's 29 and a half days, and you have to wait one day beyond that to make it to 30 and a half days. At 30 and a half days, that's already considered to be the 31st day, or the day after. And because of that, you can do Binyan Ben from 30 and a half days and onward. That has significant impact because the Bach and the Shach paskin that way. That the din over here by Binyan Bechor is something that turns out to be kula, is that you're allowed to do Binyan Ben already after the elapsement of 29 and a half days. Most instances that'll turn out to be a kula, that you can do the Binyan Ben early. In some places it'll be a chumrah, like when the child passes away, do you have to still do a Binyan Ben? For them, it would be a shorter threshold. It would actually be a little earlier. It also could be, if you believe that 29 and a half days is the count, then you really are counting me 8 by 8. Because you can't say anymore that into the 31st day is enough. I mean, that the way that we have it is that the 30th day is considered to be Petol Shloshim. The 31st day already is after the 30th day. For how far into the 31st day do you need to be in order for it to be the 31st day or beyond the 30th day? So generally, we just say once you're into the 31st day, you're done. That's good. Over here, the way the Rebbeinu Gershom says it, you need a full day afterwards. You need a full 24 hours. And that means that you're counting 29 and a half days to get to that exact point, and then 24 hours afterwards in order to reach the 31st day. The way the Bach and the Shach have it, it just means you have to get over the threshold of 29 and a half days, which in most cases will be a kula, but there's some instances where it'll be a chumrah, and obviously that'll have nafka minot if we calculate it that way, versus calculating it based on the 30 and 31st day, including whether after 29 and a half days you can already do pidyon haben, and also probably the difference in how you calculate it. If you're dealing with 30 and 31 days, we would not look me'eit le'eit, we would just look and see that you've crossed the 30th day, and now you're into the 31st day from the time you were born. If you say it's 29 and a half days, then you're looking at a much more exact measurement that really would try to take into account me'eit le'eit, as if you're counting from the moment the baby was born until the 29 and a half days have elapsed, and then right after that moment, it would be ro'oi the pidyon haben. So the way you calculate it might also be different if you think that it's governed by the astronomical month and not the 30-day month. So that's this chiddush of the Rebbeinu Gershom also impacts the halacha, but also is maybe why the Chachamim were asking my Tamayu de Rabbanan. Why the Rabbanan say the full 30 days and not 29 and a half days? That's the way the Magen Avraham reads it. Others read it. That's not exactly what the Chachamim are saying. The chiddush here is that it's 29 and a half days, like the meaning of Chodesh, that means a real lunar month, and not 30 days. If it wanted to say 30 days, it would have said 30 days. The fact that it says Chodesh means that it's counted by a lunar month. That has impact la'alacha. All right, next Mishnah. Beita betol shloshim. If the father passes away within the 30 days, b'chezkat shelo nifteh, then the chazaka is that he didn't do the pidyon haben, ad shevi raya, until you bring proof to the opposite. It's like the Gemara in the first parak in Baba Batra that speaks about that people don't tend to pay their loans within the period of time that it's due. People don't prepay their loans. You're a chazaka that people pay on time, and maybe not even on time. They may even don't make it when it's the time comes up, they go past that time. So they don't pay early, and therefore we're going to assume over here he didn't pay early. If the 30 days elapsed, here there is a chazaka that he did do the pidyon haben. Rashi says it's not such a strong chazaka, because, again, when debts are outstanding, people are not so quick to pay them off, even when the time comes. Gemara in Baba Batra discusses whether people do pay on time, or whether there's an assumption that they did pay once the time elapsed when they should have paid it. So the assumption here is that he has a chazaka that he did pay it, ad sheyomru lo shelo nifteh, until someone tells him that there wasn't such a pidyon done. Now Rashi points out over here, Mishnah should have said the same thing here, ad sheyavi raya, until you bring a proof that he didn't pay. The problem is that the kohen can't bring a proof that he didn't pay. Because the kohen comes and says, you didn't pay the pidyon haben, the first son can say, my father did it with a different kohen. You have no idea that he didn't do a pidyon haben. So Achi Yomru lo, Rashi says, is until others tell him that the father on his deathbed told them that he didn't do a pidyon haben. And even though there's a chazaka over here, that we don't need full edut to override the chazaka, because Rashi again says the chazaka isn't so strong. People don't necessarily pay debts so quickly. Since it's a weak chazaka, as soon as we get evidence to the contrary, like somebody heard the father saying on his deathbed, tell my son I didn't do the pidyon habet, that's enough already to say that he's chayav in a pidyon habet. And the Rebbeinu Gershom says, ad shiomru lo, shaloniv deh, ben eved, ben isha, ben kentan, nemanim. All of those individuals are believed in this case. I mean, ad shiomru lo is an indication of a lower standard or a lower threshold of evidence that's needed here. As long as you have anybody telling you that there was no pidyon habet, even though they're not people that are normally kasher le'idut, that's enough already to say that it would undermine the chazaka over here. That's how weak the chazaka is that we're able to undermine it, even with a weaker standard of testimony. Who liftot? Ubeno liftot. If there are two options here, he didn't have a pidyon habet, his father didn't do a pidyon habet for him, and now he has a son that he needs to do a pidyon habet for. Which one takes precedence? Which one goes first? Who called him Livno? He goes before his son. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Beno Kodmo. That the son goes first. So mitzvato al aviv, u mitzvah Beno alav. Because the mitzvah pidyon haben for him was on his father, and the mitzvah for his son devolves upon him. So one is his personal mitzvah, one is a mitzvah that he's picking up from his father. Over here you can see the machloket between them being a very fundamental machloket as to what is the obligation of an individual in pidyon haben. When the father fails to do pidyon haben, the son has to do it for himself. When the son does it for himself, in what capacity is he doing it? Is he doing it in the capacity as being a tashlumim for the father? It's really the father's mitzvah, just the father is not here to do it anymore, so he does it on behalf of what the father should have done. And in that way, he's a continuation of his father's mitzvah. It's really his father's mitzvah, but now since his father's not around, he has to do it. So that's one way to formulate it. The other way to formulate it is that his father had a mitzvah. His father didn't perform the mitzvah. Now he has a totally independent mitzvah now to be redeeming himself since his father didn't do his mitzvah, but your mitzvah is independent of your father's mitzvah. Or maybe even a third way to formulate it is to say the mitzvah is always on the child, just the child's a minor. And while the child's a minor, we can't obligate him. So therefore, we obligate the father to do it on behalf of the child. Once the child reaches bar mitzvah and the father hasn't done it, then the obligation is really on the child all along. That might be the machloket here between the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says that your obligation towards your son takes precedence over your own pidyon haben, because he says your pidyon haben derives from your father. And Rabbi Yehuda views this as being a continuation of the father's chiyuv. You're just discharging your father's chiyuv, not your own personal chiyuv. Whereas the Tanna Kamma says that's not the case, that you go first, because the mitzvah's on you. That can either be because the mitzvah pidyon on yourself has nothing to do with your father's mitzvah, it's a totally independent mitzvah, or like we said before, the possibility is that the mitzvah is always on you, just you couldn't do it when you were a minor. Now that you're not a minor, the obligation's on you, and it's a personal mitzvah, and therefore your mitzvah takes place first. So you can see the machloket here between Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim being something fundamental is how do you view the obligation of an individual to do his own pidyon haben when his father failed to do it for him. Itmar, hapodet beno b'toch shloshim yom. Someone redeems a bechor within 30 days, meaning before the obligation has devolved upon him. Rav amar beno padoi. Rav says you're successful and you have a pidyon haben. Shmuel amar ein beno padoi. Shmuel says that there is no pidyon haben here. To kuli alma, everybody agrees, miachshav ein beno padoi. You say that the pidyon haben is taking place immediately. You're saying, from now, I want the pidyon haben to be effective. It won't work, because you're not chayav in pidyon haben. Either according to Tosafot, because it's there to Ketuv, you have to wait until 30 days. Or for Rashi, it doesn't work because you haven't escaped being a nafel yet. Until you've escaped being a nafel, you can't execute on being a pidyon haben right now. Everybody agrees that if you pass the 30-day threshold, that the money is still extant, then vaday beno padoy. Then the pidyon haben goes effective at that moment. So what they're making clear is that if you make the effective date of the pidyon haben now, it doesn't work. If you make the effective date of the pidyon after 30 days, then it does work as long as the money is still extant. Meaning that the pidyon is really taking place at that moment. The monies until that point in time are in safekeeping with the Kohen. And then at that moment when the pidyon haben becomes relevant, it goes effective. Everybody agreed that works. Kiplige, where they argue is, lachash l'shim yom, v'nitaklua ma'ot. In a case where the 30 days have elapsed, and the money is no longer extant, it's gone. The coin spent the money already. Rav Amar Beno Padoy, Rav says that the child is redeemed. Midahava kidusha isha. It's no different than kidusha venisha, that hatam, lav afagav dinaklu ma'ot. There, even though the monies disappear, have a kiddushe. The kiddushin are successful. Hachanami loshna. So to over here, it should be the same thing. Just like you can say to a woman, I'm giving you the kesef kiddushim today, and I want our kiddushin to go effective in 30 days, and it works. Even if she spends the money in the interim, the kiddushin are effective. So just like over there, where the kiddushin only go effective in 30 days, and the money's handed today, and even if the money is gone by that point in time, the kiddushim still can be effective then. So it's over here by Pijona Ben. The money was given today, but they postponed effectiveness until the 30 days elapse. And that should work here as well, even if the money is gone. Ushmol Amar Lecha, Shmol says to you, Hatam biyado lekadsho me'achshav. It's a big difference between kiddushin and a Pijon Bechor. Over there by kiddushin, if he chose to, he could have done the kiddushin immediately. So his postponing its effectiveness is not a problem. But halcha, emi adol ifloto akshav. Here, he doesn't have the capacity to do the pidyon haben now. Or in essence, what Shmuel is saying is, the way that the kiddushin works is that you have a kinyan today, and then you have a delayed effectiveness. The effectuation of the kiddushin is delayed for 30 days. The kinyan kiddushin took place now. You've now delayed the effectiveness of that kinyan until 30 days later. At the 30-day point, the kinyan goes into effect, and now you have kiddushin. Shmuel says that works, because today you have the option to make the kiddushin effective immediately. Since you could make the kiddushin effective immediately, your kinyan is meaningful today, and that kinyan that's meaningful today, you can delay the effectiveness of. On the other hand, by Pidyon HaBen, you can't do that. When you say, I want to be put to my son today, it doesn't work. So now when you delay the effectiveness, you say, I'm going to make the kinyan today and give you the money, but I'm delaying the effectiveness until after 30 days. You can't do that because you don't have a kinyan that is a true kinyan today. A kinyan, according to Shmuel, has to be something that's done in the context of where you could, if you chose to, effectuate the kinyan. If you then choose to delay it, that's your choice. That's fine. So you can have a delayed effective date only when the kinyan itself is a strong enough kinyan that today you could have effected it. But you didn't. You chose to postpone it. That's fine. But if you can't effect it today, for instance, like Pidyon HaBen, then the kinyan's not a kinyan. The kinyan can only be a kinyan when it could have been effective today, and then you postpone the effectiveness. But here, where you couldn't do it today, there's no kinyan today. And therefore, when you get the effective date, it's not delayed effectiveness. The kinyan needs to be there on that day, because that's the first point where the kinyan is meaningful in the context of being effective. So that's Shmuel's view. Rav obviously disagrees and says that you can separate the kinyan from the effectiveness. Even though you can't effectuate it today, the fact that you did the kinyan today and delayed the effective date, that works. As long as you didn't say me'achshav, you don't think it's happening now, you can have a kinyan today with a delayed effectuation, and that's fine, even though you can't effectuate it today. As long as you know that you're doing it in that manner, it works. So that's the machlok between Rav and Shmuel as to how you effectuate a delayed kiddushin. According to Rav, you have a kinyan today, effectiveness later on, and the kinyan itself allows you to do that because you know that it's only going to work later on, and you're able to do that. Where Shmuel says that you have to be able to effectuate it today in order for the kinyan to be strong enough that you can postpone the effectiveness of the kinyan. Many suggest that the machlok between Rav and Shmuel is on nuances in whether you can make a kinyan on davar shelo ba le'olam. Whether you can make a kinyan on something that doesn't exist yet. According to Shmuel, you can't, and therefore you need it to be able to be effective today, the kinyan, in order to be able to delay it later. Since you could effectuate it today, it's a davar haba le'olam, and therefore later on, you can then delay the effective date. Whereas for Rav, even though you know that it can't happen today, and you're making a kinyan today that will only be effective later on, that's allowed, because the davar haba le'olam, you can make a kinyan on. Again, it's nuanced, because it's not exactly like Dovah Shalom Ba'al Olam, because there maybe isn't an object over here. It's a kinyan that you're making, but that might be the nuance of their machloket. or their machloket could relate to how we view the monies that are deposited with the kohen until the pidyon goes effective. Rav clearly believes that the kinyon was effective immediately. There's just a delayed effectiveness, as we noted already. Shmuel believes that since you cannot effectuate the pidyon ben now, it's as if you gave the money to him as a pikadon, to watch over, to take care of until the point in time that it would become effective. And for that reason, if the money disappears between the time that you gave it to him and the time that of the effective date, then there is no pidyon ben because he lost the pikadon. Now, how literally you take that he gave it as a pikadon, if it really is a pikadon, he would owe you the money back. And the question then would be, can you use a loan to execute on the pidyon ben? Or you have to say there was a matana, the equivalent of a gift that has some strings attached to it, and therefore you can utilize them, and it doesn't work for the pidyon ben because he was given it as a gift. And based on that, it would obviously have impact over here by pidyon ben, as to whether you can compare it to Kiddushin, is it the same type of case, or is it a totally different case? Now, Gemara says, Rabba got the Kaimalon, even though in general we believe the Hoich and the Pelige Rabbu Shmuel, everywhere where Rabbi Shmuel argue, Hilchatok Rabbi Surei, the law is like Rabbi Surim, Uke Shmuel Bedine, and like Shmuel in monetary matters, Hocha Hilchatok Avatei de Shmuel. Over here, the law is like Shmuel. There's some questions as to whether this should be in the Girsa here or only later on at the end of the Gemara. Obviously, it's somewhat difficult, the statement over here, because pidyon ben is a monetary matter. So why are we calling it a surei? The Gemara seems to imply that really the locha here should be like Rav, because pidyon ben is considered to be surei and not mamon. The Gemara is saying, don't think that, even though that's normally the way we think about it. Over here, Hilchatok Shmuel, and we treat it, even though it's surei, we pass the locha like Shmuel. So then, you'd have to then explain why it involves Isurei. There is a Balei Tosafot in the Gemara in Sota that discusses whether Sota is a din in Isur or a din in Mamon, because the Gemara seems to move back and forth between them. And Tosafot notes that the din of Sota has both aspects to it. It has the aspect of Isur, which is the fact that the woman's going to be restricted to her husband in the claim of the Sota if she doesn't drink the water. But it also has impact on her ketubah. She's going to lose her ketubah if we find out that she was a sotar, something went wrong, that she did something wrong. So therefore, there's both monetary impact and isurei impact. Now, you could argue by pidyon ben that you also have both aspects over here. You have the aspect of isurei, which is that you have a mitzvah to do. There's an obligation for you to be poded the child. And there's a monetary matter, which is the way to accomplish the mitzvah is through a monetary payment. So you could argue that that's the nature of it being both an Isur and a Mamon issue. And therefore the Gemara is saying focus on the Mamon side, not the Isur side. Or you could say that it has to do with the nature of the Chiyuv. Some suggest that if the Safek is in the actual obligation to do the Pinyon of Ben, and there is a Motzimi Chalavro Alavaraya, that's Negdar Kitzafek Shel Mamon, and that would be a monetary issue. But in a situation where we know there is clearly an obligation of pidyon ben, we just don't know if he's discharged that obligation or not discharged that obligation, that becomes a matter of isur rather than a matter of mamon. And then, taking off on that, if you believe that even according to Shmuel, he's got to return the money over here, the coin, then there's no monetary question over here. Because either he did pidyon ben according to Rav, according to Shmuel, he's going to have to give the money back, and they can use that money to do pidyon ben now. So the monetary matter has been cleared. The question is, did he discharge the obligation vis-a-vis the pidyon ben? And according to Rav, he did. According to Shmuel, he didn't. And so therefore it's a isur issue or a mitzvah issue, not an issue of dinei mamonot. So now the Gemara says, Tanan, our Mishnah, made betoch lamed yom, he dies within 30 days, afal pi shenatan the kohen, even though he already gave it to the kohen, yachzir lo chamesh tzlaim, he has to refund him the money. Time of the mate. The only reason he has to refund him the money is because the baby died. Halo mate, had the baby not died, beno padoi, then the child would have been redeemed. So that'd be a question on Shmuel. Sounds like from here, if you paid early, as long as the child survived, then it would be a din of pidyon ben, or similar to what we said that Rashi maybe was saying on the Mishnah, that you have a situation in which once you have determined after the 30 days that it's not an aphel, retroactively, the pidyon ben was effective because he was not classified as an aphel. He's now a bar kayoma. And so that's what the Mishnah says. It's been opadoi had he not died. It says, Hachamayaya Skinan, what's the case here? Dinu Lamaot. The money was still extant. And we said before, even Shmuel agrees that the money's still extant at the 30th day. That does allow the pigeon event to be effective because we assume that the money was deposited with the coin until that point in time. And then when the mitzvah happens, that's when the transfer of ownership takes place. Tashma, b'cheskat shlo nifteh, ad shiyavi ra'aya. The chazoka is within 30 days that he wasn't redeemed until you bring proof to the contrary. So there too, it sounds like if you did bring proof that he was redeemed, then he would have been redeemed, even though it was within 30 days. So that's again a question on Shmuel. My answer is, Hatanami didn't know the maot v'ainayu. It's a case where the money was still extant when you crossed over the 30th day, and there even Shmuel agrees that the pigeon of Ben was effective. Tani Tana Kameder Rav Yehuda. There was an Amora before Rav Yehuda going through different Mishnayot, different Braitot, and he brought a Braita that said the following, Abudei Peno B'toch Shloshim Yom, someone who redeems his child within 30 days, but no Padoi, then it works. It's effective. Amarle Shmuel Amar. So Rav Yehuda says to Zamora, Shmuel says, Ein Padoi Padoi, that it's not redeemed. Vat Amar Peno Padoi, and you're telling us that it does work? It's an interesting statement of Rav Yehuda. First of all, Rav Yehuda is a Talmud of Rav and Shmuel. And all the Gemara was doing was bringing the view of Rav and not the view of Shmuel. So why was Rav Yehuda upset about the fact that he was bringing a day of Rav instead of bringing the day of Shmuel? So now, if you say, and that's going to be the next line of the Gemara, that we paskin like Shmuel, he was upset because the bright that he's bringing is lo alibu de ilchoto, or the statement that he was making was not la'alocha, and that might confuse people. So maybe that's why he was upset. Or his point is that even Rav doesn't agree in all cases that b'no padoi, that his son is redeemed. Even Rav agrees that if you say me'achshav, it doesn't work. So to generically say that if you pay the pigeon of Ben today, that b'no padoi, that's not a statement you can make. You'd have to qualify that statement and say that's only if you don't want it to happen now. But you want it to be delayed effectiveness. But if you say me'achshav, like you think you're doing pidyon haben right now, it doesn't work. And so therefore he says that you can't have a braita that just says b'no padoi without qualifying it. Therefore better to say like Shmuel, ain't b'no padoi, and then you can figure out where it is, the case that he is padoi. V'avagav, again here the Gemara has this girsa again, v'avagav v'kaimelon karab yisurek v'shmuel bedine, hacha yochata kabat ed Shmuel. So again, here it would make more sense to have this at the end of the Gemara and say that this is a summary of the whole Gemara. And then that would imply that this statement shouldn't be where we saw it before, because otherwise why do you need to bring this statement twice? L.A.M. Kane, you say that the cases are different, or it's possible that this was a later addition to the Gemara, because it seems to many of the Rishonim that they did not have this in the Gemara, and therefore they paskin like Rav in this case, that say that the locha is b'no padoi, despite the fact that, from our Gemara, it sounds like the locha is like Shmuel, and not like Rav. The only way they could do that is if they didn't have this in their Gisahot. Tosfot HaRosh reinforces that by saying, Amai Mishabish HaBraita. Why was Rabbi Yehuda so upset about a Braita? Da'itne k'Rav. That Braita is just going like the Sheet of Rav. Ve'od kaimalon halocha k'Rav v'isurei. And we passing like Rav v'isurei. Makes it sound like Tosfot HaRosh doesn't have what our Gemara says. He seems to want to paskin like Rav because Allah Karab is Surah. You can see that in the Sheet of Mekubetz at Ot Aleph where he says, B'ktsat Sfarim Yishanim Eno. This Girsa does not appear in some of the older Sfarim. B'chein Mashmer Mitosfot HaRosh. And also from the Tosfot HaRosh, who's quoting it, makes it sound like he didn't have this in his Girsa. And according to those that believe that it should be in the Gemara, but it should only be mentioned once in the Gemara, that would mean that maybe there are different cases here, and in certain cases we pass them like Rav, and in certain cases we pass them like Shmuel. And the Shach makes such a suggestion in the Smag that the first case, the case where he gives the money and clearly indicates he wants it to work in the future as a pinyon of Ben, maybe there the loch is like Rav, because the loch Rav Yisurei. In this latter case over here, where he gives the money stam and doesn't say anything, and there we have a question as to whether he really meant to do it me'achshav or he meant it to happen in the future. Over there we pass on like Shmuel that we assume that he meant me'achshav and therefore it's not going to be effective pidyon haben. Right now the next Gemara, which is basically a Gemara that's in the Gemara in Kiddushin with regards to this matter, It says, who liftot, b'no liftot, who called him liftot? Tanu Rabbanan. Who liftot, b'no liftot, if it's between he redeeming himself or redeeming his son, who called him liftot? He redeems himself first. Yodomer b'no kodmo, the redemption of the son is beforehand. Shemitzvatol aviv, because his mitzvah to redeem himself was his father's obligation. Mitzvah b'no, alav. And the mitzvah to redeem his son is his problem, so he's got to do it first. Now we have a qualification, narrowing of the machloket. Hakol modim, everybody agrees, heicha delek ela chamesh slayim, if there's only five sela, and you only have one pidyon ben that you can do, who called him livno? Everybody agrees, my taima, because mitzvah didei adif. Your mitzvah is more adif. That's interesting, because we just saw, Rabbi Yehuda says that the mitzvah of his own pidyon is his father's problem, whereas the mitzvah of his son is his problem. So then, mitzvah didei, why does that matter for Rabbi Yehuda? Nevertheless, what Rabbi Yirmiyah is saying is that even according to Rabbi Yehuda, once the obligation shifts to you, even though the origins of the mitzvah were from your father, nevertheless, at this point, it is your obligation, and therefore you should have to discharge the obligation that devolves upon you for yourself first. Or you could formulate it this way, mitzvah begufo, something that affects you personally, should give precedence to. Even though technically, in terms of the chiyuv mitzvah, that it might be that you have more of an obligation to your son than you do towards yourself, but in the end, taking care of yourself always takes priority. Now we know from the Gemara, Mishnayot and Baba Metzia, that if a choice between yourself and anyone else, yourself comes first. And therefore over here, even though you might have a greater mitzvah to take care of your son, if you have a choice of only doing one, over there we're going to say you should take care of yourself because your personal interests and taking away the negative associations of you not having a pidyon bechor, that's more important, that should take precedence over here. And it could just simply explain that Rabbi Yehuda's statement is that in terms of shibud, his obligation to his son is better to be paid off first, because the shibud for his obligation has much more longevity and teeth to it. Therefore, it's just a matter of which has the better claim if we have to go after encumbered property. You could read it that way. If that's the case, then the Gemara's statement over here is no steer at the Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda is speaking about the ability to go get the money, versus over here we're speaking about which is the better mitzvah to do. Ki plige, their machloket is only heikadika chamesh mishubadot, but chamesh b'nei chorin. When you have five sela that are encumbered, and you have five b'nei chorin. So you have five sela, five shekel of cash that you can use for pinyon aben, and then you sold the field worth five sela beforehand. And now that was with the lekuchot, is with the buyer, do you have a right then to repossess that, or really for the kohen to repossess that in order to pay for the pinyon aben? Rabbi Yehuda Savar, Milva k'tuva b'torah k'tuva b'shtar damyo. We already mentioned this earlier, that Rabbi Yehuda is of the belief in the Gemara in Kiddushin that anything that's written in the Torah is as if it's written in a shtar. So the obligation to pay the pinyon ben is a equivalent of something that's written in a shtar. V'didei ozil v'tarif mimishabdei. So then, with his own requirement of pinyon ben, he'll go take it, he'll go claim it against the encumbered land. And then with the other five, he will redeem his son. Now without dealing with order yet, we'll discuss that in a second, what he's suggesting is that the Bnei Chorin you'll use for your son, and then now you'll have an obligation to pay the coin for your own pidyon habechor, that you can go after the people that bought property from you. The difference being is that your son's obligation only started now, when he was born. Your obligation already existed from the time that you were 30 days old. So the property here, in all likelihood, was inherited from his father, and that property and the obligation or the lien on that property preceded his sale of the property, or the buyer's buying of this property, because his lien goes so far back. So what Rabbi Yehuda says, better to use the free and clear money to take care of your son, because with regards to your obligation, your pidyon ben, there you can go after encumbered property. There you can go after people who already bought the property. And that's the base way to do it. Rabbanan sabre, milva k'tuva b'torah, lav k'tuva b'shtar damyo. That an obligation that's written in the Torah is not the equivalent of a shtar, it's the equivalent of milveh alpeh. And a milval peh, you can't go after lukuchot, you can't go after encumbered property. Therefore, mitzvah didei aviv. Therefore, we go back to what we said before in Rabbi Yirmiyah. Everybody agrees that the mitzvah to take care of himself takes precedence, and that's the same thing over here. The mitzvah to take care of himself will take precedence. So going to the Chachamim, it's very straightforward. You have no ability to go after encumbered property. So all you have is the free and clear property that you own, and all you have is five selah. So that five selah, Rabbi Yirmiyah already told us, everybody agrees, you take care of yourself first, you do a mitzvah b'gufo, and then you deal with your son. So therefore you do pidyon haben for yourself, and then in the future you'd have to do the pidyon haben for your son, or you have to do it for himself when he gets old enough. According to Rabbi Yehuda, whereby pidyon haben is considered a ketuvah b'shtar danya, that will entitle you now to go after the kuchot or encumbered property, that now gives you another option, which is pay the money towards your son's pidyon haben, and then you can go after encumbered property for your own pidyon haben, because the lien by the Kohanim on that property predates any of the sales, predates any of the parties that now have rights to the property. And therefore you can go and say as a first creditor that we can take the money back, and therefore you can accomplish both pidyon habens. Now Tosfot over here asks a very fundamental question, which is, we have a general principle that when it comes to repayment of debts, that you have to pay out of your b'nei chorin, you have to pay out of your free and clear assets before you go after encumbered property. Doesn't make sense that you keep cash and then you go to someone you sold the property and say, oh, I'm going to pay my creditor with your property. He'll say to him, use the cash that you have first. Then you can come after the encumbered property. So Tosfot says, why don't we say the same thing over here? You have five selah available to you. That five selah is free and clear. Why don't you have to use that up first before you can go after the likuchot, after those buyers? Yet when Rabbi Yehuda says it in the Gemara, it says, Didei azo utarim mishabdei, for your pidyon haben, you go after the encumbered property, and then the five, free and clear, you do your son's pidyon haben. From there, it sounds like you could even do your pidyon haben first from the encumbered items, even though you still have money at this point in time that's free and clear that you're going to use for your son. If you change the order of the Gemara, it would make more sense. If he first paid off the pidyon haben of his son, now there's no free and clear property. That's why he would then go after the encumbered property. But if you do that, then it becomes circular, which is that if he goes now and collects from the kuchot, he takes money from them in order to pay for his own pidyon haben, they should be able to go after the money he spent to pay for the pidyon haben of his son. That's because that money was free and clear. And then when he gives that money to the Kohen, the creditors say, or the buyers say, we had a first lien on this. We were here before you. And therefore now when he comes and takes their property away, they should have recourse against later creditors or later beneficiaries of that money. And they should be able to go after the Kohen who got money for the child to pay back the land that they lost in order to pay for his own pidyon haben. So that's what it says, you have to say here, these are priors that bought from his father. Therefore, they have no rights to his property. They only have rights on his father's property. Or another possibility is that when I sell you the property, I'm not giving you any access to assets I acquire in the future. You only have a right to the assets I have today as guaranteeing your purchase. But if I acquire assets in the future, you have no rights to it. So by doing that, Tosfot eliminates the capacity of the buyers here to go after the five selah that he spent with the Kohen on behalf of his son. Either because the buyers bought the property from his father, so they have an early lien, but their lien is only against the father's estate, not against his own personal property. And everyone he spends the five shekel, doesn't matter that they have a pre-existing lien, because their lien wasn't on his property, it was only on the father's property. Or it's a case where they bought it from him, but he didn't offer them that additional security that any assets I acquire in the future will also be subordinated to your right of purchase over here, and therefore they can't go after these assets that he used to pay for his son's pidyon. And then Tosfot says that the property that you have a right to go after, the mishtadeh that you have to go after, has to be his father's property. Because the chiyuv of pidyon haben on himself happened when he turned 13 years old. So at that moment, that's the moment when the shibud existed. That shibud happened when he was still a minor becoming a person of age, and then that should only affect his father's property. So Tosfot at first says, you're right, it's only for property that he inherited from his father that you can go after for the pidyon haben of himself, because that's the only property that was affected by the obligation that came when he was 13 years old. Then Tosva backs away from that and says, maybe not. Maybe even though it's not written to Ikne, because the Torah doesn't say all property that you acquire in the future will be encumbered to this Pidyon HaBen, but maybe even so it is. Because once you have an obligation to the Pidyon HaBen, it's not like it's a one-time obligation where it says, oh, when you turn 13, that's when the obligation happened. Every moment after that, you're obligated in Pidyon HaBen. It means every moment there's a refreshing of the lien of Pidyon HaBen. That means any buyers, any property you acquire afterwards, is subjected to that lien because you're still chayav in Pidyon HaBen. It's not a one-time lien. It's a continuous lien on all properties that you acquire. If that's the case, then it may be even speaking about properties that he acquired, that the Pidyon HaBen has a lien in those properties. All right, we're going to do the Mishnah, and then we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow. Chamesh Shleim Shel Ben B'Maneh Tzuri. The five seller, the five shekel for Pidyon HaBen, is done with the Maneh of Tzuri. Tzuri means tire. Means the coinage of Tyre, which the Gemara is going to discuss tomorrow, what that means with the coinage of Tyre. But Tyre was known, first of all, for the purity of its coins and its silver. So they considered it to be very good quality or high quality coins, expensive coins. And the Gemara believes that the Maneh Tzuri were similar to what the command of the Torah was with regards to monies. And they matched up with the Maneh Tzuri. Shloshim Shel Eved, the 30 that you pay as a knas, if you're sure it kills an Eved Kanani, Chamishim Shel Ones Vishal Mifateh, also the 50 shekel penalty for someone that rapes or seduces a young woman, that payment to the father or to the woman is done with 50 shekel kodesh, Umeya Shel Motzi Shemra, or the 100 shekel kodesh for someone who marries and makes a claim that the woman was not a betula when he married her, and they find out that he's lying or it wasn't true, pays 100 shekel to the father, Kulam b'shekel ha-kodesh b'maneh tzuri. All of those are shekel kodesh b'maneh tzuri. So it either means based on the purity of the coinage or the silver of maneh tzuri, or it means maneh. Maneh means 100 zuz, meaning that there are 25 shekel in the maneh tzuri. And then the shkalim or slain that you need to use are 5 of those 25 that would be representative of the value of a maneh tzuri. And so it's telling you in the smaller coinage, how do you measure that against the broader context of currency? Or it may simply mean you need to use the coins of Tzur, because the coins of Tzur represent the same coinage or currency that the Torah was referencing to. And that's what the Mishnah is telling you over here. You have to ask why the Mishnah segregated the Pidyon HaBen. Either it's because we're found in Masechet Bechorot, so it segregated it and then said Bechein for the other items, or because Pidyon HaBen is the only one where it's a mitzvah. All the other items here are aveirot. So they wanted to categorize the mitzvah alone and the aveirot separately. B'kulan niftim b'kesef u'b'shaveh kesef. All these items can be paid out either with the coinage, the actual currency, the shekel that are required, or anything of equivalent value. Means you can give other coins that equal up to that value, or even other items that are equal to that value you can pay with. Chutz mi, the way we have it in our Gemara is mishkalim, chatzi shekel that you give in the Mikdash every year for the operating budget of the Mikdash, the machatzita shekel, has to be actually a machatzita shekel. You can't give some equivalent value, you can't give something that other coins that add up to a chatzi shekel, you have to give exactly a chatzi shekel. Part of that is because it's a part of the census, also because we want it to have longevity, and also because what it represents. Also, in terms of being a machatzita shekel, for all those reasons, we want you to give a machatzita shekel exactly, and nothing else in terms of coins. Okay, we'll stop here by the Gemara on the bottom of Mem Tet Amud Bet.